Well, then, what happened? You weren't around during the Second War. That's when you were off in India, is it?
Yeah. No, First War.
First War. Yeah. So what were you doing during the Second War then?
Oh, God. Yeah. First of all, they traded him a lifetime. He got this spondylitis spine, you see, in 1935. And poor Frank Hancock, I remember him saying, oh dear, another vote gone. Because I had to go away just before that. It's at St. Mary's Paddington, you see. Great Street. And that was what happened then. And I didn't do much after. I did concentrate from what I know from this doctor in Buxton, where they sent the, that's St. Mary's sent me, as I told you, paying the extra 10 bob for me. And I could just concentrate on getting myself better. I went to two or three things. You might find something from one chap named Robert Biggs, who lives at Kingston, Field End, Kingston. His wife is a cousin of mine, you see. And when I was doing this, that was before, she lived 10 years, but I did manage to get rid of it in 5 years and be a sergeant in the Home Guard. The photos just to prove, they same from the newspaper, to prove that I was quite ordinary for what, no. I suppose if I moved, I was a bit rigid, but I was not so bent like
that. What was it? I mean, was it, I mean, how do you get it? Mm-hmm. How did you get it?
I don't know.
It just sort of suddenly came on you, didn't
it? Yes. It came gradually, a pain in the small of my back. When I was in Everest family, it was shockingly hard work. When they got slack there, it always hurt for a while. When they got slack there, it was, once at higher, and I got stood off for a fortnight. And I got a job on the tarmac over Bryan Station, as a travelling tarmac maker. There were huge blokes from Mainston, the firm came, and they had a thing not like a roundabout. And there were great, in the good yard at Bryan, there were great trucks of that grey granite chips, all in proper size chips, you think. And you shoved them up into wheelbarrows and push them up the top of this thing and chuck them in the top, and tar and all sorts of things went in there as well, and they came in those black shiny granite chips in the bottom. I did that for 5 days. It's 5:30 in the morning till 5:30 at night, half hour for dinner, that's all, no other time. And I said to the bloke, I could have a dinner or a bit like this, but it must be this work. And I said to the bloke, well, I'm going to turn this in. He said, all right. I said, you won't do anything, you're not stuck there, old Dolwyn, do anything like that. He said, no, he shoved into that. He says that it isn't anybody's work anyway. He said, it's not much of a job altogether. But it was, I think, as far as I remember, pretty well paid, but I only got 5 days of it and turned it in. And then the back got worse and worse, really. I did get a job, one nice thing in this was, Dorothy said, look at the man. So I was his wife's jam. There's heaps of people doing this sort of thing, you see. And I tell you about all these people when I get to their insurance rate. And she said, I'd like to do that. And I thought, well, can I come in selling jam? What she makes it. And I walked in the tin where the tapper tea room is. I walked in, I thought, why not? I walked in there and asked if they'd like any homemade jam. They said, no, I don't think so. So I went on and signed on. And you know, next day I came back and there was a rap at the window. There was a woman dressed in the window doing something inside. And she called me in, saw me go by and called me in. You see, you know, the window's babbled, one goes in the door, she could see me coming. And so she said, we are interested. I've seen Mrs. So and so, and look, let me go and see her, you see. Tell them what, to send up some samples. So I'm making up some jam. Dorothy made some, had some jam there. But she, to make a bit more, she very rapidly made some marmalade and things of that description, you know, more awful than we had. And this woman bought them all for us in large lots. It was rather nice. And it was not only the tattlers here, but tattlers and hoes, they took them. Their van came and took a jar of them away. Poor Dorothy with the two kids, she was getting worked off her feet anyway, so.
But must have seen, I mean, you must have been very pleased with that.
Oh, yeah, we were very pleased, yeah. Because it was a, it rather tickled Dorothy beat up going in the houses, because that was pleasing to her. But the fact that I had, suddenly it wasn't bold, I just suddenly did it.
Yeah.
In a kind of desperation, going in the doors, I suppose. And, yeah. But nothing was going to happen. This woman, she looked quite nice woman. She must have been poorest of the boss, mustn't she? To,
yeah.
That somebody came in, this the boss and another woman. Talked him to stop.
What did people do for doctors and things at the time?
For doctors?
Mm. I mean, did you have to pay for them or what?
Well, there was the 1912 business that they bought in. Yeah. Which, by the way, to drive it, it was only the threat of the 26 Labour votes that got in 1906, and all the Irish ones, all of them. It was a major threat of the Irish with the advocates in Ireland in Westminster. You see? Mm. They, I don't know if they're all Irish people, but they could say all their people came from there, and whether they belonged to the Sinn Féin or not, they were resentment of a conquered country, don't they?
Mm.
Anyway, that was one thing. I said this the other night at the Lord's Friend of Hospital. The 26 of us and all the Irish people, a lot of them made a pretty big opposition, you know. Besides the Liberals who'd been sent there, especially for the Liberal idea instead of the industrial idea, because there's two lots of Liberals. The man who stopped, the man who bought in the Factory Acts was Shaftesbury, or fought for him, was Shaftesbury, a Tory. The man who stopped slavery was Wilberforce, a Tory. See? The people who opposed Factory Acts and slavery and tried to blockade beat the American blockade, bring the cotton to England, and was quite a thing about it, wasn't it? In the time of the Civil War over slavery, they were buying the cotton. And mostly on the side, because there's an industry, they're mostly on the side of the southerners. Mm-hmm. See, so the Liberals were a mixed lot, and they got a Liberal body, and some of those in the would be all for the good things in the 1906 and 12 bills, you see. Mm-hmm. But some of them wouldn't be, so.
So what would you do? I mean, you went to a local doctor?
I went to a local doctor. See, you had your panel doctor. You started when you were 16, and you go out there. Pat Nichols' father was mine. I had been up there with his pain in my back for several times. Nothing done about it. They were all missionaries, you know. I'm not declining their missionary. They were missionary doctors. Old Nichols was. Pat was, I think, because I've known Pat since he was a tiny kid. But the men who came there, and this bag, it got so constantly bad that I thought I must do something about it. And when they had a new one come, you know, I was a friend of the family, and they have a new one, give them a run off, I suppose. You know, Nicholas had a terrific, he worked up a terrific lot of big clientele, what do you call it, panel.
Mm.
And, on several of these chaps and all that sort of thing, and no, it wasn't anything serious, because if it was your organ, not your kidneys or anything like that, they said, oh, no, if it was your organ, you'd be in pain all the time, and somehow it wasn't there at all, see. So I was there, but on this, going in by chance, the new doctors, the visiting doctors then, I had to walk in like that, and came in there and stood in front of him. He said, what's the matter? I said, I got a cough, and he said, I've got more than a cough. What's the matter with the cough? I said, jars. I've got a backache always, isn't it? Jars, mostly I've got a backache. And he said, do you know there's other things? It can be besides kidneys and things like that. He said, it could be a spine. Come here, turn around. He said, I'll see about that. And Dorothy went up and saw Nichols. She's rather furious, you see. And she went up, broken his dinner hour, his lunch hour. Nichols was called us by our Christian names, and he was Osh's doctor, the boxing brother's doctor, you see. my boxing mate, he was his doctor, and, you know, so we had a very, and he said, oh, well, I'll send him up here tonight, I'll see about it. What do you want to know? It's x-rays or something. So he said, oh, I need an x-ray, you see. But it shows you how careless things were in those days. He still just said, when I went up and see him, he said, you want a good uppercut of the chin, Charlie, don't you? That's all we never do, and I said, you know, I expect him to. If it did not mean Bible. Anyway, it was all, he still didn't have my coat off, he didn't do anything, you see. He had my coat off and listened to my chest and that sort of thing, but not for, he hadn't looked at the spot. And with this, I went up to, he said, I'll get you x-ray. But this is the great part of it. I went up there to the x-ray, they're not a possum what we've got them now, but it was an x-ray affair. And the woman up there said, you were climb up on me. She said, aren't you stiff? You're the stiffest person I've seen. Rolled over on my back, oh dear, she said, and top of my head down, because it was shockingly bad by that time. She said, I've never seen myself so stiff. And then she suddenly saw me while I lay there, she's pondering over what to do about it. She said, is it all the way, right, all the way, I said, all the way down, yes, or it's all the way down from my neck, because the neck was the last part, you see, that was the last straw. And she said, well, he says, x-ray his neck. You know, I'm going to x-ray it all the way down. He didn't say this, but say what he likes for me, because it's a very expensive game, especially in those days. And it didn't cost anything to me. But she did x-ray all the way down. Next, my daughter, Ben Nichols, the old Pat Nichols was nearly in tears. No, not Pat, the Nichols. Oh, was nearly in tears. Oh, Charlie, you look here. He said, what to do about it? And Dorothy, said, put her oar in there. She saw him, and this is the time she recognized it. And she said, now, what are we going to do about it? So he said, well, the surgery is full of it, really. It's rheumatism of some sort, but didn't know what it was. But she went and saw Brian, his apprentice, and he told her what it was. Nichols said, oh, she had been stuck for like that all the time, you see. Brian said, just be doubled up in the ball, like this woman I tell you about. Same thing, I said, but I don't know what else was for. And there we were. Brian got me to Paddington. As regards money, he said, can you manage a small fee? I'll get you Dr. Hunt. Dr. Hunt was attended on the authority and all that, if you remember, it was Dr. Hunt up there, wasn't up that way. He said, I'll get you Dr. Hunt's bed, and he had a bed for you in St. Mary's. And he said, but don't you know, it would be a small fee, it would be 3 guineas or 5 guineas or something. I don't know if we pay, I thought we paid 3, but no, we did pay the 5. That's every time we had to pay, you see. Just that, and the... since we were up there and then from Brighton, and I paid him right away, and he looked so, and looked so kind of, not ashamed exactly, but.
Hello. This is Callum, it's my second son. My younger son, that is. It's all right, you stay where you are,
yeah.
It's all right.
I thought it was Mrs. Jenkins coming
no,
in.
No.
I didn't see, I can see him now, but I couldn't see first of all because I can't see very well. That's better. And he set to work to do it, had all sorts of things done. But I say 30 more x-ray pictures. And they gave me some stuff that helped to stop it. Really, it was a good hospital. And then finally, I was there 6 weeks. And they said, we're going to send you to, you were going for a fortnight. And we'll send you to Buxton and see what they can do about it. They'd probably get you all right. Mm. Well, when I got to Buxton, the bloke said, well, we can't do that. I said, I must have gone again then. I'm biking about the country, get insurance, since I wasn't all that hard. I managed to keep biking. I don't have much traffic on me. And he said, "What was your chest expectancy?" So I think I told you before. And he told me what it was. So he said, "I've got 3/4 inch now, and the birds are a bit in front." He said, "You won't get any better. You're like these people who rolled up all that sort of straight ahead of you. Doing the better bunny." He said, "You'll make yourself feel a lot more comfortable." You know? And so I did this breathing exercise he gave me, which meant I learned from my brother at the time and my daughter since, that they're not, if you can run, they will make you run any faster or any better. But in this case, they are good because between your shoulder blades, for example, there's nothing you can move in. It doesn't move like a snake, does it? It can't, it's fixed. There's only one movement, it's upwards, and the only way it can be done with is with the breathing, really powerful breathing. Build them up, separate the vertebrae, the cushion, I don't know what you call it, in between the discs, they're called, you know, grow as quickly as a mushroom. That's why there was a saying in the old days in the books, you used to look at health and strength and all those that they looked advertising to increase your height, so they could. Well, give it the sort of exercise that would leave your legs short, I suppose. But ever, that is the adventures of that.
Yeah.
And I just spent on liked it, and I said to Osh, that's my brother, I'll say Osh, you know, brother. And we got the various things out. We had a 7-pound pair of dumbbells and a 14-pound pair. Those were all solid iron ones. We had 2 4-pound heavy, you know, Indian clubs. We had various things. I had to start from lower than that. I was going to build these pectoral muscles up, like the doctor said, and breathing went on all the time, see, so I can. Dorothy said, she could see the difference when I came home with 3 weeks up there. And that bloke asked me to stop 3 weeks from one, I wouldn't, you know. Wasn't it funny? I said, what? They had people named, consequently, they had people named from Manchester University to have a look. So if I had any sense, I'd known it was. They was getting on with it all right.
Mm.
Anyway, where was I, John?
Well, no, I was asking you about that. You were telling me about that.
I want to get off this thing because I can finish this finish this illness part. I got these things, and so to build these pectorals up, I just start from below. The 7-pound dumbbell, I couldn't move them for them like that. It was many times, you see. You know, I had no way of increasing them anyway. You know, I got 2 flat irons, the flat iron people used to have. Dorothy had 2, one was 4 pounds, one was 3.5. And the 4 pounds in one hand, and the 3.5 one in the other, and 1/2 pound weight in my hand, in the lower one, you see. And all the exercises like that.
Mm.
Worked it out, holding a bit more of shot weights, those were rings on little. About little, where were you? And got with these scales weights, because she had a pair of scales. And I got a bit more. Figured I could do the 14 pounds in time, and I did the 14 pounds in time. Before I got to the end, there was 2 big dumbbells, that was all right. But the 2 7-pound ones was all, as they, my hands left the ground, they all decorated with, you know, weight out in there to make them of equal size. So I did what he told me and got better. And like I said, the pictures in the press, what we took out, we bought them on from the press, I think.
Mm.
And you wouldn't see them any time in life. They were quite different than me. You wouldn't credit it, so I didn't die. I was 10 years.
Mm.
So during this time, I had not much interest in anything else except attention on myself. And the two girls, you see. I don't know what the bloody hell was going to happen to them. They had this lovely place with the railway bank there and there.
So when was that? When did you...
1935, that's right. 1936.
Yeah.
Then, I did go to Robert Biggs, ran the Left Book Club. You know, my cousin, husband, I think. But, and he also was secretary of the Labour Party, so I suppose it was getting on all right. Yeah. I know I was so impressed and... not being able to leave my own worries. I was so impressed when I let ring with them in Kingston there. When I did see them, that I thought, well, in the war, each one of the terriers in the year between 38 and 39 in Wales, he's at Dunkirk and captured there. So he was a prisoner of war, see. And I was thinking, as the war came to an end, we'd raise up the Labour Party a bit, so we did.
Mm.
And then I was set to work on it. And my one view was, blokes like Bob would come home and think they were let in with no party there, you see what I mean?
Mm.
So during that time I was laid up before, well, they must have had quite a decent party, you see.
Yes.
They used to help with the Spanish war efforts and that sort of thing.
Yes.
I remember when we used to pay, Mrs. Reed was something, and we'd give them a subscription, taking kids in the Everglades and all that sort of thing, parties of kids.
Yes.
You know, into the Spanish, not for Spanish kids, and that sort of thing.
Yes.
So, and I'd say all these things were going, there was a Labour Party, but since he didn't fight in the elections, because he wanted later, that was all we were worried about, you see.
Yeah. So, you mean, presumably all what you were saying about your illness happened at the time of Spain, didn't it? So
yeah, that's right. Well, that, I just, 1935, 1936, I started to really make myself better. I went to Buxton on New Year's Day, 1936, after a fortnight or so on Christmas Day, and got better. And then the end of 1936, I had to go towards the end. I still went twice a week to St Mary's Paddington, to their gymnasium always, you see. And in the end, people would say, you were getting on all right, and the woman of Dr. Smith in charge said, she took me over to the mirror and said, you look at yourself, and it was, you know, it made me feel really good. And she said, be a professional, strong man, you know, look at it. But she said, you keep doing this, all right, that's what they want. So you, on the thing of you, what my brother and I had before then was a book by Hackenschmidt. Remember Hackenschmidt? You don't know.
No.
Have you read any of Gerald Curtis' books?
No.
Night in the City. Hackenschmidt was a Russian wrestler, a great Russian wrestler. And his, this is introduction to his life story and his few exercises of where it all came from. That's what I got it from.
Mm.
Called increasing resistance. Nowadays, the thing is ordered to increase in progress, I think that's what it is. We often hear it mentioned on the word increasing, this will help them. Keep on doing it to keep building up, you know, the parts, the organs working, they're demanding more oxygen all the time, you see. Anyway, after the war, I really set to work then, so did Dorothy. Before the war almost came to an end, we set to work and it got together again. There were a prison officer, a warder man of some sort up there, and several more people we picked up. What we could of the old WEA in early 1930, Labour Party, in the mixture of WEA and Quakers. However, Frank Hancock had left and gone to, I don't know where he went to, but you know what Johnny Ward did? When the Labour Party won the blooming election, and they wanted, Attlee wanted Ernest Bevin to be foreign secretary, is he? Just a bloke, boy. And Frank Hancock fought him. Because Frank Hancock, Quake, was a pacifist, not an idiotic. Probably punched drunk with blooming ideas, isn't it?
Well, Frank, was it? Had he got a seat then somewhere?
No, he hadn't got a seat, no. And
you mean that
he left us. He wanted to go about preaching pacifism.
Do you mean that he fought him in the election?
Hmm?
Is that what you mean?
He fought in the election.
He stood against Bevin.
Against
Bevin in the election.
Yeah, but he didn't get any votes, or not many. He got a reasonable man, what you'd expect from people who were pacifists at that time. You expect a good many of thankful that was over there. No more, that's genuine. But when it's just doing it for the sake of making yourself a martyr, aren't you really? I used to think of Frank, you're getting a bit punch drunk on ideas because, nothing came on. Took the girls to see him. He said, could have a meeting tonight, come along. went on Kenwood's Heads along the road. They were little theatre people along Kingston Road they lived, and my girls, Bounty and Joan, called them the Broodies. They were all happy, trapper, be miserable then. You wouldn't think the war was just over. They never smiled. And Frank was just the same, just as bad. Somebody said on another of these occasions, and we know because Frank was a good chap, he was, why don't the top of Wadbow, right on the hill. He had a haze up there. He said, well, gave a party, tea party, or something, you know, go in there and when we finish up here, whatever they're doing. And he said, you can play the gramophone or something. So went there and would have played these people, went in there and they said, what's the gramophone? What records has he got? Well, I didn't know what records he got. Someone said, well, can we have, you've got Dick Shepherd's record. You know, Dick Shepherd, the pacifist person.
Yeah.
He was like 15 years old, you know, this old record, well.
Yeah.
And even my two girls, they're pretty forward, I guess, but they called them the Broodies.
Yeah.
Always,
yeah.
You know.
Did you ever get caught up in the pacifist thing between
no,
girls?
No. We went to a thing once and Dorothy put her name there. They said, you gonna put your name? I said, no, not me. Dorothy said, well, I'll put my name there in case they take my husband away. Mm. Oh, it'll help not to take my husband away, but I said, no, because its ideas are good, real, and really proper, but they're not practical, are they? They're not real. They're not, you know, they can stand by using nuclear bombs. That's quite sensible, you know. Had nothing to do with it. But if people like the Germans had come in, I was very glad I had, because in the early days of the war, it was probably 1940 or something, it was shortly after a bit of time of Coventry being bombed. And I was up early in the morning and there was some of this, you know, haw-haw business going on. You know, haw-haw was Lord Haw-haw.
Mm, yeah.
Well, there was a woman speaking and she had a cold, horrible voice, all big propaganda. And she sketched out the plan for the master race, what we intend to do, you see. Mm. Those who'd like to join us can, the men. The women will go to make more German soldiers, in which the captain, what the aim was.
Mm.
And all this sort of nonsense, you see.
Mm. Mm.
Well, of course, any bloke like me would make me pick up his bond, pick up his musket, pick up his rifle, wouldn't he? And so I don't hang out. I was glad I was in the Home Guard.
Mm.
You know, I did very well there because I was, you know, I can remember skirmishing from my time in the Yeomanry and all that sort of thing. And then they could shoot in with the King's Royal Rifle Corps, you see.
Mm.
So I got a wise instructor in that, and we could, new lungs and new wind and new that. I'll show you a picture when they're running on the hill. And well, you know, fully loaded with the equipment then. So that was all right. Mm. Didn't talk too much about myself. You haven't got that on, have you? I can say.
Just finished.
Oh, thank God.
Well, it's a good time to finish, really, because